So just following from the previous discussion, we had three of us had a discussion saying it would be nice to have a round table and just talk about Shin Buddhism and Zen Buddhism, including the teachings of some of the key figures like Shinran and Dogen and others if we like. So I just do want to leave it open, and maybe we'll have this round table for about 20 minutes or so and then open it up to everyone to enter into. How does that sound? Yeah, okay. So, Josh, why don't you begin?
Part of what's been so valuable to me is I love the Dharma so much, and I have so often felt like such an inadequate Dharma practitioner, and it was so incredibly helpful to me to hear Shinran say that he is incapable of any religious practice whatsoever, and to really be able to feel yeah I'm like that too, and starting from a certainty that there is really just the Dharma. There is just one Dharma, and it can get expressed in different ways. It can get expressed in non-dual language like Dogen specializes in, and it can get so fully functionally expressed in the language that sounds dualistic of Shinran. And there's a way for me that part of what my Zen practice had felt like so much is feeling like I can't do this. I can't become Buddha. I can't reach anything. And the liberation and the validation for me of Shin is that it said, yeah, Josh, the reason you feel like that way is because you're right. You can't. And I was like, oh, I can't. Right. And until I realized that, whatever I was trying to do, whatever game, whatever little secret practice, whatever, you know, thing I was engaged in my mind when I was saying what I'm doing is I'm just sitting, it wasn't it. It was a trying. It was a striving. It was a trying to do this thing that is fundamentally outside the category of things that are doable by my little me. And so this Shin and Shinran opened the door to me, for me, of being actually able to just truly entrust myself to the Zazen that is not mine. Truly entrust myself to the universe universing and not be continually not be continually asking myself, how am I doing? How's this? How about now? Is this good? Although, because it still comes up for me, but I don't care so much about trying to answer that question. And so for the Zen Sangha here, I use language of truly entrusting ourselves to Zazen, entrusting the universe to the universe. I talk about receiving this moment of self and the universe together. And I talk about one of the great the benefits of Zen practice is that it strengthens our capacity for faith. It strengthens our capacity to entrust to this thing that is always there, and especially to entrust to it even when it is seemingly not apparent to us. And all of this in my Zen teaching is, in an important way, kind of straight up Shin. And one of the things that's interesting listening to Mark talk, sometimes I suspect he's a closet Zen practitioner. And I am a Zen teacher who's actually a closet Shin person. I've heard Mark say samadhi many more times than I have ever said it in my Zen teaching. It's not an area of emphasis at all for me. So this is that's a little overview of where I'm at in all this.
Yeah, great, thank you.
I have a couple of things that I wanted to share. And so when Mark told me about Shinran's vow, he made many vows, but there's one in particular that is quite famous. Yes,
right.
And it's he vows to bring all people, all beings, to enlightenment before himself.
That's Amida.
Amida makes this vow.
Yes.
Right. And so I heard this, and then I participate in our Dogen reading and study group here at Greater Boston Zen Center. And this year we've been using this book, Moon and a Dewdrop. And one day I was just kind of flipping through, and I saw a section that we haven't actually explored, but it caught my attention. It's a section called Waka Poems. It's a set of poems that Dogen wrote. And I just happened to see the first one, and I decided to take a look. And I'd like to just share it with you and then just make a few reflections in terms of what it brought up for me. So this poem says, awake or asleep in a grass hut. What I pray for is to bring others across before myself. Although this ignorant self may never become a Buddha, I vow to bring others across because I am a monk. How august! Studying the old words of the seven Buddhas, you pass beyond the six realms. So I read this and I just was like, my head exploded. Because, for so many reasons, one, it's beautiful, and such a heartfelt desire, and it made me think of Shinran's vow, and it made me think, wow, this desire, this human desire that we have to help other people. That comes up for us, and how beautifully this has been expressed, that it would put other people ahead of themselves. Just so touching to me. And both of them, I think, living not exactly the same time, but pretty much contemporaries, right? 12th century?
Yes,
right?
12, right? Dogen, 1200 to 1253, Shinran, 1173 to 1262, so 90 years old.
Yeah. So, and as Mark had mentioned earlier today, most likely never have met. And yet this human desire to help other people and to put others before themselves, so awe-inspiring for me, and because I always feel like, oh my God, I could never be like these people. You know, these are like super, to me, these are like superhuman people. Except that as I read Dogen more and more, I see that, oh, he's human just like the rest of us, you know. And yet he expresses this beautiful desire, just like Shinran in his vow. And so that has been a very meaningful connection for me. I think the other thing that I wanted to share is we read, this is in our sutra book, and it's a part of a reading by Shohaku Okamura that Mark mentioned earlier. And it's the name of the piece is "Those Who Greatly Realize Delusion Are Buddhas, Guidance in Zazen, or a Meditation." And it's just a short paragraph that I wanted to point out. "In Zazen, we let go of our narrow, limited karmic selves and become one with the total, interpenetrating whole that is absolute reality. We can never see this absolute reality as an object of our discriminating minds, but we are naturally a part of it. We cannot be an observer of absolute reality because we ourselves are part of its total movement." And this paragraph, when we read this, this paragraph always touches me. And it touches me for so many reasons, but mainly because it brings up this entrusting that the Shin Path has introduced me to. And so it's such a human thing to want to be able to, when we hear about this oneness, this reality, it's like, yo, where is it? Where can I see it? How can I feel it? How can I express it? How can I understand it? Teach me about it. Read me tell me the books to read. Tell me, show me. Right? I want to, as a human being, so natural to want to understand it. And then if I understand it, then I will get it. Right? So natural. And this line that points out to us, that Shohaku Okamura points out to us so clearly, you know, that we cannot be an observer of absolute reality. We can't step outside of it and see it because we ourselves are part of its total movement. So for me, this is like, oh, okay, so then if I can't go find it somewhere, then I just can sink into the entrusting myself to it, to know that it's there. And in one of our precept study group, someone said, I don't know who said it, but they made a beautiful comment, and I wrote it down on one of my sheets of paper. Because it just touched me so much, and it has stayed with me a long time, and it was, you know, even though we can't see it, even though, especially when we can't see it or feel it, it's there. It's always there. And again, this speaks to me of this entrusting. So this, as a human being, you know, I'm frequently asking myself, so what should I do? What do I need to do next? It's always, what do I do? And in this case, the teachings are to just be and to entrust ourselves to this great ocean of compassion, this great oneness. And I see this in the Zen practice of just sitting. Same entrusting.
So it's been just so wonderful to have had the opportunity to get to know Josh and to get to know Laura and to share the rhythm of the Dharma. And for those who are newer to Buddhism, one of the challenges is how to connect with the feeling of the Dharma. And part of it, we can say, it just comes over time, but that's not so helpful if one is having difficulty getting a palpable sense of it. And so there are a lot of things, you know, that are relatable to the Dharma, because in the view of Buddhism, it's already there. It's actually, reality is much more intimate than what we think about it. Our thoughts actually project outwards, and so our usual sense of reality is actually abstracted. It's farther away. We just miss what's really just very intimate to us because we we overthink things. But regardless of whether one is beginner or not, one of the things that we experience in life, we experience beauty. And beauty is very closely related to this feeling of oneness. When you see a beautiful sunset, or when you see a beautiful flower, there's a feeling there, there's a sensation there that connects you to something beyond your thoughts. And also wonder, like looking up at the stars at night or looking at the moon, there's a feeling that comes with that, a feeling of wonder. And there are also thoughts that come with it, but thoughts that are accompanied by sensations and feelings. And that's like a glimmer or intimation of a deeper level of connection. So, you know, inevitably, as part of the process of following the Buddhist path, one's going to necessarily have moments of obstacles and getting mentally cramped about it, trying to overthink it. That's a natural part of the process. But at the same time, we have many, many daily experiences which give us intimations of what that deeper flow or deeper connection is through beauty and through music and through, even just the rhythm of the seasons. So, you know, almost any time of year, it doesn't matter when, if you've been cooped up inside for whatever reason, the moment you open that door and you feel the fresh outdoor air, it's just liberating. That is another sensation that connects us with the larger world, which is ultimately, it's just the universe itself in all its glory and all its oneness. So we have different ways of reminding ourselves that it's not just this tiny little world of ideas that we're trapped in, but there's a greater world that's immediately accessible. And the more we do the chanting and the more we do the sitting, then over time, it transforms us. Zen masters have expression. It's like the scent of the robes rubs off on us over time. Yeah. One still has to make that effort. So all of that thinking and sometimes getting frustrated mentally because you're overthinking Buddhism is not a waste, because it's just part of the process. Part of the process. My grandfather took me aside right at the end of his life and became very, very serious because he was ill and he knew I was going to study in Japan. And he knew that this might be the last chance to talk to me. And I have 16 cousins. Of all my cousins, I'm the only one who's fluent in English. And he's not fluent in English. I'm fluent in Japanese. And he's not fluent in English, so he could speak directly to me in Japanese. And not only that, but because I'm the only son of his oldest son. So he took me, he says, I'm going to have a talk with you. You come into my room. So he brought me into his study. And he started to get frustrated because he wasn't getting through to me. And nobody was going to get through to me at that point because I was just confused. And he said a lot of things, but one of the things he said, two things that were really striking. He says, Shōgarai! Dōse mukō kara kimeraru nda! He says, it doesn't matter because it's the other side that's going to decide. And what he meant by that is it's going to be decided by other power. It doesn't matter how hard I try to get you to get a sense about it, get understand. It's out of my hands and I don't have to worry about it. It's not his doing. Shinran says that himself in the Tannisho. If it were the case that I was the cause of people being able to realize true and trusting, then I might then legitimately enter into arguments over who is my disciple and who is not. But since it is by the hand of other power, what he really means is because it's life itself that leads each person to the deepest truth. And at most, right, the maximum role that the teacher can play is like a midwife. All the work is done by each person struggling and thinking and trying to feel and just trying to live your life. And if there's some way that we can just help the opening just a little bit, then that's the maximum role that we can play. So he says, because of this, I cannot, for this reason, I do not have a single disciple. That's why in the Shin tradition, we do not have a master disciple lineage. It's a little bit different from Zen that way. We don't know master disciple lineage because Shinran disavowed having any disciples, even though many people considered him to be their teacher. So it's really life itself at its deepest level that is the greatest teacher for each of us and for all of us according to the Shin understanding. And you know, those of us who are, it's still important to take seriously my role as a teacher, because that's what wearing a robe means. Don't wear it if I don't intend to take the responsibility. But the responsibility of that doesn't mean then that I know what the truth is and everybody else doesn't. No, it just means that I can express the Dharma in my life and how I have experienced it and realized it in this moment. And hopefully that has that has some kind of positive impact for those who are able to hear it. But the evidence for the Dharma is all around, in every moment, in every place. One of the difficult things about living in 2014 in Boston or in Eugene or in North America is it is more difficult, generally speaking, for us to feel that connection. We're living in concrete, on concrete, in smartphones. But we need to allow ourselves more time, you know, just like they say, give yourself some time to smell the flowers by the roadside, to feel more connected to the rhythms of nature, to the rhythms of the universe, because the unfolding of the oneness of the Dharma is none other than the rhythm of the unfolding of the universe itself. Josh was saying, you know, maybe I'm a closet Shin Buddhist, and maybe Mark is a closet Zen Buddhist. And certainly there's a truth to that, because I've been exposed to Zen practice. And in my case, so not necessarily for other people, but in my case, there's no way, there's absolutely 100% no way that I would have come to appreciate my own tradition, that I could realize my own tradition without the circuitous route that I took through Zen Buddhism. Mm-hmm. And that's because I'm a product of modern culture or postmodern culture, which is overly intellectualized. So in order for me to be able to connect with the deeper flow of emotions of which is the expression, self-expression of boundless compassion, it's like drilling a well. And doing Zen meditation is like drilling a well until you hit water and it flows up from the depths. So without this practice, I mean, I don't want to present it as a preparation, but for me, it kind of worked that way. But now, it's kind of inseparable. But also because I had many, many great Zen masters who were my teachers, a little bit of that has rubbed off in my style, so that my style of presentation is a little bit Zen, more Zen than some other Shin ministers. So there's that element. But it doesn't really matter. You know, whatever. Another way to understand it is there isn't any fixed Buddhism. So down through the centuries, all of the interpreters, including Shinran and Dogen, and all of the other great masters, but also many, many lay people, all of their expressions of Buddhism are individual and unique. And that's because each person is individual and unique. There's no set formula. Right? We don't have to reinvent the wheel, because we should benefit from the experience and wisdom of the past. But we cannot replicate that exactly, not because we're not good enough, although that might be true at some level, but because we, each of us, are unique individuals. And that Buddhism provides vehicles and tools for the great experiment of life. And it's up to each of us to come to our own creative alchemy in this unfolding process. Does anybody have anything they would like to ask or share? Ask or share.
Yes, Laura, as you were talking about, how do I experience it? The baby fish is swimming around in the ocean and comes up to its mother and says, "Mother, where's the ocean? Where's the water? You're in it. I don't feel it. I can't see it. But you're in it."
Yeah, yes, like that. Yeah.
And one quick comment on what you were talking about. Last week I got a call to go to hospice in Middletown. And there's a young man there who's a Buddhist, basically what we call a bookstore Buddhist. He never really was affiliated. But, his mother was dying, and he was having a lot of problems with that. And I went to sit with him for a while. And he was so much up here that he couldn't feel it here. It was in his head. He had done all the learning, you know, he had some things misconstrued, but he had a lot of knowledge about Buddhism, book learning. So getting him to move away from his head and get down to his heart, especially when he was communicating with his mother. He was trying to talk with her. And
yeah.
No, it might be more important for you to just stand there and hold her hand. Just be with her. After 2 hours, he finally got it. But it was an interesting experience.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Ron. So, one of my professors at school knows I study Zen, but has more of a soft spot for Shin. So he's always critiquing my self-power ways.
Right.
But one of the interesting things, and this may not be related, but in reading Shinran, like the Tanisho, there's a moment where they're talking about Shinjin, and they say, "But I didn't feel like relief."
Oh, exactly right, right.
At the moment of Shin, and that's been hard for me to make sense of.
Yes, so that's I believe it's section 16. Yeah, you have section 16. So Tanisho, this is my dad's translation. Only one I recommend. No bias here. I've read them all. Because it's the only one that conveys the flavor. But Tanisho, first 11 sections are supposedly direct quotations from Shinran as heard by his disciple Yu Yan. And the first 10 sections. 11 through 18 are, sections 11 to 18 are commentaries by Yu Yan that are interspersed with direct quotations from what he believed his teacher Shinran stated, and then the epilogue. Okay. So this is the most widely translated, widely read work of Japanese Buddhism, period. That there are passages in here that are regularly quoted, for example, even in high school textbooks. So it's been translated into many, many languages. So there's a section in here. Okay, this is actually the same, it's the same question, okay, it's the very same question in Zen, it's the same question. The disciple asks Zhao Zhou,
or Joshu. Why did Bodhidharma come from the West? It's the same question. And what does how does Zhao Zhou answer? It's the answer. Why did Bodhidharma come from the West? Pine tree in the garden. Right, that's the answer. Pine tree in the garden. So, and what is the meaning of that? What is the meaning of that? Someone help us. What is the meaning of pine tree in the garden?
There's a second part to that koan where the monk says, don't talk to me about external things. And Joshu says, no, I'm not.
Maybe it's in the earlier section. Oh, here it is. I'm sorry. It's section 9. Okay. So here's the section. Although I say the Nembutsu, Nembutsu is another term for Namo Amida Butsu. Nembutsu comes from the Sanskrit. Buddha Nusmriti. Butsu, so it's reversed in the Japanese. Butsu is Buddha, and Nen is Nusmriti, means it's related to mindfulness. So it's remembering the Buddha. So literally, this is a little bit aside, but it may be helpful. When we say Namo Amida Butsu, it's a way of remembering or returning to the source. That's why it's called Nembutsu Buddha Nusmriti. Although I say the Nembutsu, I rarely experience joyful happiness, nor do I have the desire to immediately go to the Pure Land. Pure Land is synonymous with nirvana, and is with emptiness and oneness. What should be done about this? I asked. Then my dear teacher responded, I, Shindan, have been having the same question also, and now you, Yuyen, have the same thought. When I carefully consider the matter, my birth or realization of the Pure Land of Oneness is settled without doubt, for the very reason that I do not rejoice about that which I should be bursting with joy. It is the working of blind passion which suppresses the human heart that would rejoice and prevents its fullest expression. All this the Buddha already knew and called us foolish beings filled with blind passion. Thus, when we realize that the compassionate vow of other power is for beings just like ourselves, the vow becomes even more reliable and dependable. The working of blind passion also causes us not to want to go to the Pure Land, right? Lasso, right? And makes us feel uneasy worrying about death, when we become even slightly ill. Impossible it seems to leave this old house of agitation, meaning this body, where we have wandered aimlessly since the beginning of time, nor can we long for the Pure Land of Peace, which we have yet to know. This is due to the blind passion so truly powerful and overwhelming. But no matter how reluctant we may be when our life in this world comes to an end, beyond our control, then for the first time we go to the land of fulfillment, the realization of oneness. For this very reason, the vow of true compassion is completely dependable in our realization of the Pure Land of Oneness, absolutely certain. If our hearts were filled with joyful happiness and we desire to go swiftly to the Pure Land, we might be misled to think that perhaps we were already free of blind passion. So there's a lot here. I'm just going to feather out a little bit and then hone in on the main point. Okay. So if you're sitting in meditation and you're having a quote-unquote good meditation, right? It's like when I woke up this morning, I just had this long breath just exhale right out of my body. Oh, today is going to be a good day. We're going to have a good Dharma event. Just hold on to that breath now. Okay? No good. All right. So that's a moment of delusion, you see. This is the way that the human mind has become conditioned. The human mind, the Zen way to look at the human mind, it's originally pure. Right? It's just complete oneness. But then there's the karmic accretion. There's just all the strange, odd habits. We all have these quirky habits. Something has to be exactly a certain way. Like when I open my laptop, I have to open it to just a certain set of web pages that are all tabbed exactly a certain way. What is the deal with this obsession, right? So we all have these strange little quirks. And then the purity of our original Buddha nature or boundless compassion becomes obscured. And one way of interpreting Buddhist practice is a way to return to that original purity. So that's why D.T. Suzuki says, in the Buddhist view, we have not left the Garden of Eden. We're still in it. We've simply forgotten. So that's, it's kind of Buddhist view. But as we practice, our minds have become so insidiously conditioned to try to possess anything and everything that even when we are able to let go of our ego, we want to possess having let go of our ego. That's how crooked my mind is. Very simply, right? And so this is what Shinran is referring to when he says the working of blind passion causes us not to want to go to the Pure Land. Impossible it seems to leave this old house of agitation where we have wandered aimlessly since the beginning of time. We suppress the emotions with our blind passions. But just like with the Genjo Koan passage on the weeds, it's all the same. There's no other reality except the present moment. And the entry and the destination is always and ever will be the present moment. So Yuyan is having doubt because he's been now for probably decades, he's chanted the Nembutsu. But he doesn't feel enlightened. He doesn't feel like he's able to truly trust. And in this frustration, he shares this with his teacher. And this is the Xingwei. This is so characteristic of the Xingwei. But that's the key. It's not that that's a problem to be gotten rid of. Shinran has been waiting for 30, 40 years for Yuan to say this. He has not been waiting for Yuan to say, I've attained true entrusting, and now my heart is pure. No, that's a lie. He's been waiting and waiting and waiting for Yuan to say, I've tried so hard, but it doesn't seem to have gotten me anywhere. And immediately, Shinran says, ah, yes, Yuyan, I too have had the same thoughts. Becoming completely one with Yuyan and relieving Yuyan with the obsession that somehow I need to be better before I'm acceptable. Mm-hmm. Completely releasing that burden. So one of the things we really emphasize in Shin Buddhism is gratitude. Be grateful. This whole emphasis on receiving, right? But what I'm most grateful for in the Shin tradition is I don't have to be grateful. Yeah. In fact, Amida, my deepest, truest reality, which is connected with everything, and so which I also experience in my Buddha altar. But so we put next to the statue of the Buddha here, the Myōgo. So that's the central altar in Shin Buddhism. It's not a statue, but the name, Namo Amida Butsu, because it's like a mirror reflecting back to me my true reality, both the Namo and the Amida Butsu, the foolish being together with the infinite light. That is me, right, at the deepest level. And that Buddha, which is inseparable from me and is my deepest, truest reality, doesn't want the good mark. Just wants mark. And all of me, I don't have to become a good Buddhist before I'm acceptable. That's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. Never, ever, ever. Only you. This is the call of the Buddha. Only you, in all of you, right? So Shinran says, all this the Buddha already knew. Why? Because the Buddha is the depths of my being, and there's no running away from the depths of my being. And the depths of my being includes everything. Just to be embraced, just to receive, is more than sufficient and is everything. Put the palms together. Just receive, just receive. So what's your name again?
Duncan.
Yeah, Duncan. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, part of you is thinking, I need to get beyond this thinking about Buddhism and experience Buddhism. Yes? Absolutely, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's the one the Buddha wants. You get it? That's the one the Buddha wants. Not the one who's free from thinking, but the one who's overburdened with thinking. That's the one the Buddha wants. Yes, the only one the Buddha wants. And that Buddha is the Buddha.
I want to ask. Yuyan's question to Shinran. I've been doing this practice, but it turns out I'm still me. I'm doing this practice, but there's all of this humanity and whatnot going on in my mind. This is also what koan study, as we use it here, exactly brings us to. Over and over again, seeing the certainty that we're sure whatever it is, this is not included. And 1,500 times we come up against, yeah, this too. What? Really? No, no, but you don't understand how big a mess I am over here. I can understand maybe that's true for you. Right? Maybe that's included, but not this. And this is also what we sit right in the middle of in Shikantaza. which is why it's the noticing our strivings and our machinations, and just seeing them as strivings and machinations, and seeing them as already included, not pointing us towards the thing we need to get. This is our practice.
So there's follow-up to this. So this is, you know, why did Bodhidharma come from the West? This monk's been a monk for 15, 20 years, and he's thinking, well, I just feel like a bump on the log sitting all day long. And here's this foreign religion, and somehow I just, you know, I thought this was it for me. I was going to enter the path, and then I was going to experience this amazing enlightenment, and then I was going to get to have my own temple and so on and so forth. But I've been a bump on the log, and still I just have all of this confusion. So I resent the fact that Buddhism ever came here in the first place. And, you know, if everything was empty, truly empty, everything, oneness is everywhere, then it doesn't even make sense that Bodhidharma came to this country, because you can't transport oneness from one country to another. It's already there. That's all what's behind that question. Why did Bodhidharma come from the West? And Zhaozhou's or Zhoshu's response is, wake up! Right. Because you're missing the essence, which is just what is the present moment. So when a Zen master says, like in the Rinzai tradition, you go in for the interview and they ring the bell. Chirin, 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 chirin. Chirin, chirin, chirin. Next. Zen master's thought is, I put on my best posture and just open as much as possible. Still, the student couldn't answer the koan. How disappointed, I failed again. So this is the Zen master's feeling. It's not student not good enough. It's like, I just couldn't realize everything. I just couldn't help him realize everything's already here. I just wanted to hug him or her. But no, I just couldn't. I failed again. That's a feeling Zen master. They don't want to turn him away and say, more zazen, more zazen. There should be something better I should offer. So when Shinran says this, yeah, and I too have been having the same thoughts. It's like, well, there's all these people around, you know, they all come from all kinds of backgrounds, there's lawyers, you know, there's musicians, you know, there are plumbers, there are electricians. Why did I have to be this hyper-intellectual who has the hardest time letting go of my thoughts? This is your thought. This is your thought, right? And he says, no. We need you, Harvard types. No. Just you. No one else. Just you. Beautiful, just as you are. You think those fancy things. That's what I love about you. That's your charm. That's what makes you relatable. That's why people are able to laugh at, but with Kelsey Grammer on. What was this TV show?
Frasier,
right. Yeah, Frasier. Kind of like Frasier. But only you. Isn't it great that the universe invented it? Our secret. Just Duncan. Just Duncan. when I was a college student, well, that was an interesting time. You know, I got so confused. I became so confused. I was scared to look at my own hand. That was the level of my confusion. Hyper confusion. Like confusion to the 100th degree. It's like the hyperspace of confusion. That's how confused my mind was. I couldn't do anything. I was virtually paralyzed. And I could write papers, that was it. Yeah. You know. But that was the great gift. Without that gift of agonizing confusion, I might have gone on and studied Buddhism, but it would have never meant anything to me. Because it was the profound turmoil and suffering of that period that became the impetus, that became the engine of compassion. Absolutely, 100%. Absolutely, yeah. And for me, it was just a life and death struggle. But it was just the greatest gift I could ever receive.
I'm Mike. And, talking about confusion, I still have it.
I still have that.
I still have that. And so I guess, like, when I first started coming to practice, I was hoping that would go away. You know,
right.
That would be, you know, okay, meditation is going to help me calm myself.
Right.
But instead, it just, at least, you know, especially initially, it was.
Right.
Oh my God, this is even worse.
No, absolutely. That's right. Just lift the lid off the sewer.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
But you spoke about, you know, how there's this innate desire, I guess,
yeah,
to take it all in, the bad and the confusing.
The bad, the good, and the ugly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And, I think that's what the practice has helped me do, because I'm still often like, God, what am I going to do with my career?
Right.
Sometimes I hate going to work or thinking I'm not doing anything that's really worthwhile.
Right.
Struggles with my son or whatever. But it doesn't panic me like it did.
Right. So, you know, there are changes. We have to be careful there, because there are changes, but there aren't changes. Yeah. Everything in Buddhism is yes and no. Neither yes nor no. So it's a little tricky area, but, you know, it's like, I'm still confused, but that's the best part of what you said. Once you started getting into a little progress part, then that's more confusion, actually. I'm still confused. That's the best part. I'm still confused. Thank Buddha. I'm still confused. Thank Buddha. Oy vey. Thank Buddha. I'm still confused. That's the best part. So it's not really that we get rid of it. It's like a good stew. The longer it cooks on the stove, the richer the flavor of that confusion. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We don't want to get rid of it. Yeah, don't get rid of the good stuff. Don't get rid of the good stuff. I mean, there are aspects of this. Without any Buddhist practice, Zen practice, or Shin practice, or whatever, there are things that we notice change in the course of our life, right? We develop resilience as we grow older because life requires it of us. We don't get what we want. were emotionally too wide open. And so we learn not to shut down while developing internal resilience, right? So, I mean, guy to guy, you know, it's like how many times have you been turned down for a date? You know, before I got married or before you got married or whatever it is. Well, you learn to pick yourself back up and then to enjoy the rejection. I'm just kidding. I can laugh about it now. That makes it even funnier. Anyway, so I don't know. It just, you know, you don't want to get rid of stuff. It just gets deeper and deeper. It's more like red wine that ages and gets more full body, more complex. Yeah. So we don't want to get rid of that stuff. We're, in one sense, our personalities form when we're very, very young. And we don't really change that much. It just deepens over time. And things don't hit us. It doesn't incapacitate us as much or as long, or we're not, you know, buffeted by the storms of life as much or as long, things like that. And all these things, that's the thing, is the great container that is, you know, another expression that Shinran uses for the vow is the ship of the vow of compassion that enables us to cross the ocean of samsara. But when we start to look into that ship, it's as wide as the ocean itself and even wider, because it's a limitless ship. And so that's why that moment of confusion, I'm still confused, is the most important moment in which to bow and receive that confusion fully. Is I'm grateful for this confusion instead of being deluded into thinking I'm making some practice. This is the big danger. Yes, I'm making some practice, getting better, because then you set yourself up for the fall. Right? It's like anything else. It's like the Patriots dynasty. Oh, well, they haven't won a championship for 10 years. What's wrong with them? Even though they're making the playoffs every single year. The demand is so high now, it's just impossible. Right? When you start to make progress, it's like, what's going to be the next stage? That's why purposefully, both in Shin Buddhism and Soto Zen, we don't really have progress. There is deepening. You can say that. Right? You can say that. We don't want to discount that aspect, but it's not by getting rid of stuff. It's by digesting and realizing the stuff I have was already good enough, more than good enough, because it's my stuff, my stuff. You know, I remember when I was in my teens, I had a difficult time, like, finding, being comfortable laughing, which is kind of hard to believe now.
Making up
a lot of time. Right. You know, I felt awkward. I couldn't find the right pitch, essentially. But all that's good now, because it's all that process. It's an experimentation process. All that became part of me. And now I just love to laugh, you know. And I found my comfort zone in that. But you don't get that without that process. But it's definitely not the case that I became a better laugher. That's not right. No. It's the journey, stupid. Yeah. Enjoy the journey, yes. What other time do you have in your career that you don't have to serve on a million committees? I just came from 18 hours of meetings. Now's the best time. But each time is the best time. The seasons of life. Each time is the best time. Yeah. Receive each moment. That's why we bow. Even more fundamental to Buddhist practice than seated meditation or chanting is bowing. That's why, which chapter is it in Shobogenzo? Daihai Tokuzui? Bowing and receiving the marrow. Bowing to attain the marrow. Bowing and attaining the marrow. That's one of the chapters of Shobogenzo. Bowing and attaining the marrow, right? That's a direct allusion to Bodhidharma, but more importantly, that's just becomes just distraction because it's just bow. Just bow is even deeper than just sit, absolute 100%. Just bow is the essence of Dogen. Just bow. Just bow. And Shin Buddhism also, just bow. That we have an opportunity to do this act is the miracle of life.
Mike, when you were talking, I was thinking about how I used to spend a lot of time and effort on self-improvement. And I was thinking about our culture with all its self-help books, you know, and this sort of ingrained idea that there's something wrong with us. We have to figure out what it is, then we have to get rid of it. And then we'll be okay, and we'll be able to join all the other humans who have already figured out how to make themselves perfect, you know. And I never could be in that club. I mean, I kept trying to be in that club, you know, but... and then I found out that none of the other humans could be in that club either. You know, there are no perfect human beings. And this... this wanting so bad, or this belief that there's something wrong and we have to fix it, and then we'll be okay, you know, so human,
yeah,
such
so human.
This foolish so being,
yeah,
you
so
know,
human.
Such a human thing, right? And then we find out that it's one of the most fundamental things that connects us, that we all think this,
right?
Right? That there's something wrong.
Right.
And then I'll be okay, right? And
So, you know, compassion is the Buddha's compassion for us. We have compassion for other people, but it's also kind of a species compassion. The Buddha has compassion for our species, you know, not so advanced after all.
Mm.
Yes, this is the Buddha's conclusion. Good, not so advanced after all. But precisely because of that, the one I love the most.
On the other hand, we're also taught the Eightfold Path, we're also taught
right.
the Bodhisattva vows.
Right.
In essence, that's Buddhist self-improvement.
It is. You can say that.
Yeah.
Or it's Buddhist non-self-improvement. That's the difference.
Yeah.
It's non-self-improvement. Yeah. So... my father used to do martial arts, Aikido. I used to do Aikido. And Aikido is distinct from most other martial arts because there's no tournaments. Because there's no winning and losing. So no tournaments, right? And one time, there was intensive summer camp at Hampshire College. And all the great teachers from America came. And there was a question and answer period. And one of the students asked one of the teachers, was a direct disciple of Old Sensei. So Aikido is a relatively recent martial art, where the founder passed away in about 1970. Old Sensei was just, he was almost a mythical figure, except that he was actually alive and I saw him, and he was performed miraculous feats. And somebody asked one of his direct disciples, who was like a 6th or 7th degree black belt, is Aikido self-defense? And the teacher said, no, Aikido is not self-defense. Because no self in Aikido. Yeah. So, no self-improvement in Buddhism because no self in Buddhism.
Yeah.
So, how many people do not know the game paper, rock, and scissors? Okay, everybody knows. Okay. So, my Zen teacher in Japan, Kobori Nanne, was trying to explain a deeper level of Buddhism. And he says, you know the game, paper, rock, and scissors? Okay, he says, this comes from China. But Chinese play this game a different way. Loser is the one who wins. Right? So who gets the bigger piece of pie? Paper, rock, and scissors. So if you do scissors and I do rock, and you lose because you do scissors, you're the one who gets the bigger piece of pie. Not self-improvement. No. Loser wins. This is the path of foolish being. The deluded one, the one who hates the weeds, is the one who realizes the present moment. The one who doesn't feel the joy of true trust. This is the real one. In Aikido, the highest attainment is not the one who has perfected the throw, okay, but is the one who skillfully takes the throw in such a way as to be able to teach the person who's learning how to throw perfectly. But this is the essence, for example, of a mother lion teaching her cubs. How does a mother lion teach her cubs? By lying on her back and letting her cubs have the taste of winning. We want to win. We want to become enlightened. But then we're missing the best part, the juiciest part. The part that drips with sweat, tears, and blood. Because haven't all of the best bonds in your life, especially bonds of friendship, come through having shared the worst of times, not the best of times, the worst of times. The person who's been there for you, or that you've been for that person, right? It's the loss that counts, not the win. Non-self-improvement. Grasshopper. When you can steal the self out of the palm of my hand. When you can steal the non-self out of the palm. Get all this. It's irrelevant. It's all irrelevant. It's a struggle, isn't it? It's just, now you put your palms together and you bow and you think, that's all. It's all there. It's all there. Yeah, it's all there. It's all there, baby. That one could have. So everybody who's experienced in Buddhism has known the expression, "Hard is it to receive the life of a human being? Hard is it to hear the Dharma? How is it? How difficult?" How rare and difficult to attain the Dharma. Just to have received this human life and just to have received the opportunity to know, to put one's palms together and bow. And this bow is one time only, will never ever happen again in the entire, 150 billion life of the universe. And I get to receive the universe right now in all its glory. Wow, that is just so mind-blowing. We want to experience this. No matter, even if we only experience it this much, it doesn't really matter. You can't help it. Okay, palms together. So, I usually generally sit seiza in the morning in front of my Buddha altar. That's with my legs folded under my knees. And, it's for a relatively brief period of time. I don't usually sit in the half lotus. But whenever I go to a Dharma event, the Shin temples have adopted the Christian style. So they have pews. So we sit, right, in a chair. But whenever I go to Buddhist centers, usually I get to sit on the floor, and I much prefer it. But because I don't usually do it, my legs get sore. But that's the good stuff. Because it enables me to connect more easily to people's suffering, including my own. So that's the good stuff. Okay, 10 minutes.